Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is episode number 198. And my name is Derek Gallimore. So today we have a very special guest. His name is Ricky Shetty. He is best known for his blog, Daddy Blogger. Okay, and he also has the DigitalNomadMastery.com podcast and website. So Ricky Shetty is all about digital nomadism. He started long before that was even a term. And he really epitomizes the whole thing. So he obviously started traveling when he was a single guy. Things were easy back then. But he now has two beautiful children and a wife. And they are now traveling across the globe as a family. So he blogs all about this in his blog, which is Daddy Blogger. This is one of the early day blog sites out there. So he's got quite a following now. And also he has DigitalNomadMastery.com. And the podcast for that, and actually I was also interviewed on his podcast, so super exciting. What have we got in common? We've got a lot in common. Ricky is actually in the Philippines now. He's traveling through the Philippines. He is married to a Filipina, but also he is very accustomed to working remotely and running businesses remotely, and also he has an outsourcing operation, just a young one, but based in Venezuela. So he has a lot of insight into working remotely and how you can run businesses differently. So I had a really good conversation, and I'm sure you will enjoy this one. So if you want any of the contact details, or if you want to know any more about Ricky or any of his businesses or offers, go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/198. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by someone slightly different, but actually very close to home here in Manila in the Philippines. And we actually met through mutual contacts. We share a lot of similarities, even though we're sort of in slightly different sectors. So I'm super excited today to be joined by Ricky Shetty of Daddy Blogger. Hi, Ricky. How are you?
I'm excellent, Derek. So grateful to be on your show today.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I'm super excited to have you. You're almost celebrity in the blogging space, and have been doing this a long time. Now, you know, our similarities. You talk about, and I'll get you. You know, you can obviously introduce yourself better than I can, but you talk a lot about traveling around the world, about digital nomadism, about remote work, and you know, I have also embraced this lifestyle, I suppose, without knowing. And you know, pretty much since the last 22 years, I've been on the road now in various countries and traveling and living in different countries. And, you know, now I think more, it's becoming more popularized, and there's so many more resources out there to help people on this journey. And one of the resources, obviously, is DigitalNomadMastery.com, which is your website, your product, and also you have a podcast called DigitalNomadMastery.com. So super excited to have you. And I suppose, do you want to just introduce yourself to the audience?
Absolutely. So my name is Ricky Shetty. I'm from Vancouver, BC, Canada. But currently, we're here in the Philippines visiting my wife's parents. So my wife's actually Filipino, and we have three wonderful kids together. And they're, of course, beautiful because they're mixed. My ethnic origin is Indian, and her ethnicity is Filipino. So we have Indian, Filipino kids who are all born in Canada. We have a six-year-old daughter, a four-year-old son, and then a two-year-old son. And we've been traveling around the world for the last year and a half. I've been to 81 countries on six continents. And my big goal is to visit every country in the world and be the first family to visit every country in the world. And I work online. I do several different things online. I have the whole multiple streams of online active income and passive income model. Primarily, I'm doing private coaching. So I do business coaching, particularly around the topics of social media, blogging, how to become a digital nomad, how to make money online. So I do private coaching. I also have several different online courses. I have about 12 of them right now on Udemy, which is a great platform to uh, you know, sell your online courses. And then I have 6 Kindle books and counting. I'm actually in the middle of releasing a book a month about the 7 continents. I've released my first 3 books on North America, South America, and Europe. The next ones will be on Asia, Australia, Africa, and then the last one will be Antarctica. So 7 books about the 7 continents in 7 months. And besides that, of course, the travel blog, daddyblogger.com. We get a lot of our stuff sponsored. So we work with hotels and resorts, and we work with sightseeing attractions and travel companies. So it's been it's allowed us to travel the world and obviously save money by cutting costs through getting sponsorships and, of course, promoting those companies to an audience of fellow families and fellow moms and dads. So that, in a nutshell, is a little bit more about myself, Derek.
Wow. Well done. You're a busy guy, aren't you, Ricky? It's not just traveling around the world and sitting on a beach, is it? You're actually hugely productive in your time.
You know what? Like, even today, it's a beautiful sunny day here in northern Philippines where I'm right now. But I've actually just been, I had a coaching call earlier this morning. Then I had a podcast interview. Then I went for lunch, came back. I'm doing the podcast with you. And then I have, I'm recording a Udemy course. And then I have a coaching client later on today. So I'm sitting in my hotel here working most of the time. And you have to. It's part of this whole digital nomad lifestyle. That, you know, the perception of, oh, you're always at the beach, always on vacation, is not a correct one, because a lot of the time you're actually working more than you're actually sightseeing. And I forgot to mention, I'm actually doing a little side hustle outsourcing business as well. So I have a team in Venezuela, and we can definitely get into that as well, because I know that's one of your main passions and focal points. So I am doing a lot in the midst of course, you know, having a marriage and raising 3 wonderful kids. So work-life balance is key for me right now.
Yeah, you must be a busy man. So I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, the sense of remote working and the world being really your playground and marketplace. I grew up in a small town in New Zealand with about 100,000 people. And I think there's risk, you know, these towns are beautiful, but there's a risk that when you grow up in these towns, you have quite a myopic view of the world. And really your marketplace is those 100,000 people. I think it's changing a lot now with the internet, but I noticed that as soon as I left 18, my horizons were instantly broadened. And then when I went traveling to South America, they were broadened again. And then when I moved on to London, they were broadened even further. And, you know, I now, you know, run my life with a perspective of, I can go anywhere in the world, and if I'm going to start a business, then the world is my clientele, and then, you know, all of the world are potentially my employees and candidates. You know, but yet I'm so amazed that there are so many people that really don't quite connect in this way. I promote outsourcing, and a part of that is educating people that, you know, there are so many vast resources out there, and it's really, you know, such an opportunity to go exploring, to look for outsourcing in Venezuela or, you know, Eastern Europe, or have a look at the capacity of people in the Philippines, for example. What got you started with your travels and your sense of adventure? And I suppose, how did you then start working that into your career?
Great question, Derek. Great question. I love when I get asked that why question. Well, in my early 20s and, you know, actually in most of my 20s, the whole decade of my 20s, I was traveling and working. I was using a strategy called a working holiday strategy. And, you know, you as a Kiwi, you were qualified for that as long as, well, Aussies, Kiwis, Brits,
yeah, very common.
You know, Irish, Canadian, a lot of nationalities around the world, they qualify for this as long as you're under 30 and you can work in a different country and get paid. So I was doing that way before the internet got invented and way before this whole digital nomad term became fashionable. And I was going around the world, working and traveling. So I actually spent a year in Europe. I spent 6 months working in London, saved up enough money, and then I was able to backpack around Europe, just staying in hostels and you know, doing the Eurail and hitchhiking and doing it very much on the cheap. Then I taught English in Japan, and then I was able to travel around Asia. Then I actually did a working holiday in Sydney, Australia. Then I traveled around Australia and New Zealand. And then after all those 3 major continents, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Oceania, I ended up broke. So I went back to my parents' house in Vancouver, and I was staying with them. And this was in my early 30s. So broke, 30 years old guy with no future prospects. Definitely not marriage material, right, Derek? So what happened is at the time when I was broken, kind of unsure what I was going to do with my life, I ended up meeting my wife. And, you know, when you're looking for your wife, you usually don't end up meeting her. When you're not looking, when you're more like in this phase of, okay, now it's time to focus on myself, my career, I met her. And, you know, at the time, I didn't know much about entrepreneurship. But I got introduced to, like, I started as a network marketer, you know. I know no judgment here. I'm now I no longer do MLM or network marketing, but that's how we started. And, you know, there's a lot of some amazing MLM companies and network marketing, no bashing here. But that's how I started. I just started learning about, okay, running a business, you know, improving my mindset, learning about products and sales. And then from there, I started doing event production. I was organizing social media conferences, blog conferences, internet marketing conferences. So my skill set was like community building and running events. So I started doing that. But then I made a big realization that if I kept doing events, I would be tied down to my hometown for the rest of my life. So while I was doing my events, I was already starting to build up my travel blog. And because I built up a successful travel blog, people asking me, okay, how do you do this? How do you grow such a big social media following? How do you get engagement and how do you get, you know, conversions? So I started coaching people about that topic. So I was already starting to build up my internet marketing business at the same time. And in the last 2 years, I went through a little bit of a depression too. I was feeling like, is this all there is to life? You know, staying here in the suburbs and, you know, not showing my kids the world and losing my sense of adventure that I had as a single guy. Now that I'm married with kids, I've become domesticated, suburbanized. So that depression, you know, that kind of suburbanization alongside with my zest for adventure and travel prompted me to ask my wife, what do you feel about traveling the world? And my wife, after many, many reluctant conversations, she finally agreed and she said, okay, honey, we'll do this for a year. And if any point during the year we don't like it, we'll come back to hometown. So here we are a year and a half later. Obviously, we both have been loving it and our kids have been loving it. And of course, we've had our struggles and challenges. You know, struggles financially, struggles with the Wi-Fi, struggles with socialization for ourselves and our kids. And, you know, obviously the tiredness and the burnout associated with travel constantly and checking in, checking out hotels and Airbnbs and figuring out the buses and learning the language and so on and so forth. So that in a nutshell is a little bit of the backstory of why and how we started traveling. And we intend to keep being nomadic, so to speak, but more set up bases. So now we've set up a base here in the Philippines until December. We're looking into Africa next because that's one continent I haven't explored as well as the other continents. So that's the story of how we got here, Derek.
Well done. And you know, we probably share similar experiences. When I was backpacking through South America, there wasn't really the opportunity to be a true digital nomad and really earn an income on the road. I did a little bit of English teaching as a foreign language, as a lot of these people did. But back in 2000, you know, I knew one guy that had an early stage laptop. You know, no one had laptops, no one had mobile phones. So there just wasn't the connectivity. But now, and I suppose, you know, you could speak to this with a lot of expertise, there's just incredible opportunity for people to be on the road and still be connected to the information superhighway and, you know, literally the sort of world economy. So have you seen that open up a lot? But also, you know, how does it balance? Are you really having a holiday or are you really working hard? And, you know, is it sort of all it's cracked up to be kind of working on the road, then having to get on a bus and then having to sort of get to your work whenever you can fit it in?
Yeah, you know what you see on social media, Derek, and, you know, to all of your listeners, isn't reality. It's social media. It's the good stuff. It's a very unbalanced view of a person. And not many people are going to share, I went through a difficult day, I had a fight with my spouse, my kids threw a tantrum, you know, we're struggling to pay our bills this month, we had to borrow money. Like, who's going to say that on social media? Not many people. I actually give a big kudos to those who are more open. And I know, Derek, your story, you've been very transparent and very open with your whole journey. And, you know, obviously you've shared that on your podcast. But I love people like yourself who are vulnerable. And, you know, I attempt to be more vulnerable. On my blog, I've shared about, you know, the divorce of my parents and how that left me quite broken. I've shared about my difficulties with my father and my lack of a relationship with him. I've even shared about, you know, the fact that me and my wife, we've had to go to counseling to help deal with our fighting and, you know, not go down the divorce rabbit hole. So we've actually got counseling to help us along. And, you know, even as a dad now, I always struggle with, okay, how do I balance my life between being the provider and the protector, you know, building my business while at the same time, you know, obviously investing time with my kids. And that's always going to be a struggle. And any parent or your mom and dad who's listening here today will be able to relate. Man, it's tough. So we've had challenges. I find the biggest challenge for us has been our kids in terms of schooling. We're doing like world schooling and homeschooling. Now we've put them in private schools here in the Philippines because we're going to be here for about 6 months, and it's really good for them to learn about their Filipino ethnic identity. But that's been the challenging part because we're traveling like we were in South America and Central America last year, and they were always constantly making new friends. And they go to playgrounds, make new friends, and then having to make new ones. So that's been challenging. And it goes with the territory. If you're traveling, as adults, we're okay with that. You make a friend and you connect with them on social media and you can maintain the friendship. And kids, I think they need that little bit more of the stability. So we've realized that and we have adapted our style to meet their needs. And even me and my wife, we're a little bit different in our styles. I'm more of a fast traveler. She likes more slow. I like a lot of places. She likes less places. So we've had to find that balance too, right? So it's very important to kind of figure out that the needs of each person, especially if you're traveling as a family unit. And my wife's been super amazing in terms of helping, you know, give me the space I need to. So because the internet isn't very good here in the Philippines, sometimes I'll just go check myself in a hotel and stay there for a few days and just be away from the kids. And I need that time and the space and that kind of that energy zone where there's no kids screaming, there's no like demands on my time. And I just get into work zone. I do all the projects that have deadlines and, you know, I need to get done. And then I go back and I'm a much better dad and a much better husband. So that's really helped as well, doing these kind of mini Ricky retreats, the double R hashtag Ricky retreats. That's helped a lot. So, yeah, hopefully those tips and strategies will help your audience out there.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And for anyone that hasn't really traveled extensively, you know, hasn't been on the road for maybe more than 2 months or something, you really do get to know yourself and your travel partner after an extended period of time, don't you? There's nothing kind of that drills down to the basic fundamentals of people when you're on the road and, you know, and having to go through all these different challenges daily. I really don't know how you do it with, you know, with a whole family in tow. It must be quite a feat.
Yeah, I mean, you have the blessings and the challenges. Like, you know, I talked about some of the struggles, but there's so much incredible blessings. Like back in Vancouver, we were both working. My wife worked for Corporate Canada. She was working for Best Buy and Accenture. I was doing my event production business. So we'd be so busy. She'd be working 9 to 5. I'd be working like evenings running my events. So we would just meet in that crossroads time of an hour where we hand off the kids to each other saying, bye, bye. Yes, the kids will be fed. Yes, yes. Bye, bye, bye. Boom. And then we were off on our merry ways. And then we'd do the same thing day in and day out. And then our kids, like they were going to daycare and the daycares were raising our kids instead of us parents raising them. So now we're spending like, you know, our quality time with them. We've created an internet marketing online business, which allows us that opportunity to work from home. And, you know, my marriage is much better than it's been back in Canada. And our family unit's been much better as well. So, yeah, you definitely have to weigh kind of both the pros and the cons of this lifestyle. And any lifestyle, you know, no matter what lifestyle you choose, it's going to have both the good and the bad.
Yeah, it's a crazy grindstone. I mean, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but the, you know, the kind of Western, I suppose, rabbit hole that all of civilization has gone down or going down, you know, you kind of trade a higher quality of life, in inverted commas, but really you're sort of sacrificing every minute of your day, really, aren't you? And then sacrificing kind of access to your family and children just to have the kind of SUV in the driveway. It's, you know, and I think like a lot of the digital nomads can kind of relate to a life where they're looking for something maybe a little bit different or alternative. In terms of your remote working, so, you know, I spoke earlier that back in 2000, there was no real access to any kind of online commerce or sort of a world marketplace. Now there's an abundance of online marketplaces and access to all of these things. So again, I encourage all of my listeners to really look at the resources available out there in the world via online kind of marketplaces and portals. But how do you find it? So all of a sudden there's a lot more opportunity, but there's equally so much more competition online. How have you seen this market evolve over the last kind of 10 years that you've been doing it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously nowadays people realize the power of the internet to make income, and not just businesses or corporations, but moms, dads, small business owners, people who didn't consider the internet as a viable option. And we have, you know, us who are not digital natives, we have immigrated into this internet age. We have had to adjust too. I mean, I grew up, you know, in a day and age without cell phones, without internet. And, you know, I was always thinking along the lines of, okay, I need to go to work, get paid by my employer, and then, that's how you live. And then I had to make the shift from an employee mindset to entrepreneur mindset. And then there's this other shift, which I don't think has fully caught on at a global scale yet, this whole opportunity to make money and travel, this digital nomad shift, which is just happening now in the last 5 years, I would say. It's really, really taken off. But still, it's limited to people who are, you know, there's a traditional digital nomad stereotype, you know, like a male, Caucasian, early to mid-20s, single, on a beach in Thailand working from his laptop. And of course, there are the females who do that as well. But then there's also people in their 30s and 40s and 50s who are doing it. That's couples who are doing it. There's young people who are retired and they've actually, you know, they have an empty nest and they decided, okay, I can, you know, take my business and travel with it. There's people like myself. We're definitely the minority, you know, husband, wife, and three kids traveling the world. But I do feel that this shift is going to be much more hyper-accelerated when people realize the opportunities. The fact that if you're a coach, for example, all you need is the internet connection, a pair of earphones, and boom, you can do your coaching call no matter where in the world you are. And, you know, coaching is a great time, you know, time for dollar kind of trade. And people who haven't really made that full transition, I would recommend doing something like that. If you haven't become a full-time internet marketer, maybe just try doing some coaching. Build it up into a quote-unquote side hustle. And then when you feel you are ready, then you can take the plunge and do it full time. Yeah, but I definitely feel that in the next decade or so, you'll see digital nomads as more the norm. I don't think it will be completely the norm, but it will be more normalized.
Mm. And so in your experience then of kind of, I suppose, wandering the international marketplaces, you recently started, I suppose, an outsourcing service provision in Venezuela. Can you maybe just, you know, if my audience haven't already been introduced enough to the outsourcing concept, but what is it about outsourcing? What are the key concepts that kind of appeal to you, and why is outsourcing a good concept?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm so glad you have a whole show dedicated to this.
200 episodes.
There you go, and counting. So the fact that outsourcing is also very misunderstood, and you know, a lot of people say, "I just want to hire locally," or "I just want to hire nationally," or "I just want to support fellow Brits," or "I just want to support fellow Kiwis or fellow Americans." You know what? Why not support fellow human beings? Because I look at outsourcing as basically one human being paying another human being who happens to be in a cheaper country who will do similar quality work for a much lower price. That's the bottom line. That's what outsourcing is. You can argue it a different way, but it's basically that in a nutshell. And the reason I got so passionate about it is because obviously as a small business owner, I was looking to save money. And I think the cost drew me at first. I was like, oh, I can get stuff done like a quarter the cost that a website costs. Like, for example, you know, a website in Canada where I'm from might cost about $1,000, right? But I can get them done in Venezuela for about 100 to 200 US. Yes, that's right, about 200 wow. US for a website. I can get logos done for like $5 US, right? A logo back in Canada, if it's done by a professional brand logo designer, will probably cost a few hundred dollars minimum. And the quality is very comparable because no matter where in the world you are, you have graphic design schools, you have all the programs like Adobe Premiere, you have all the video editing software. So what ended up happening with me, I was traveling around South America. I our family actually did a loop of the entire continent, visiting all 12 continents. And when we were traveling, we were learning Spanish. So I just started talking to my Spanish teacher, and I was asking him about, telling him about my business. I do, coaching, I do travel blogging, online courses, etc. And then, I said, I need to design a new website. And he's like, my friends can do that. And I said, how much would your friend charge you? He's like, I don't know, maybe about 100 US. I'm like, what? Did I hear that right? And then he's like, yes, is that too much? I was like, no, that's actually a very, very good price. Mm. So I was like, let's do a test. Let's try designing a website. He designed my rickyshetty.com website, by the way, too. He designed my Daddy Blogger logo. If you have links, you can share them. But it's a little plain logo with my family in it.
We'll put links there.
Yeah. And then what ended up happening is, just through this conversation with my Spanish teacher, I did a test. I was like, okay, let's see the quality, the speed, the communication, making sure all those variables fit. So if I decide to do this as a business eventually, it could and would work. It worked. It did work perfectly. There was obviously issues like with anything. For example, there were some delays with the deadlines. I wanted it done on this day. And then they had to delay it a little bit. And then some communication barriers, because the English isn't perfect. So they wouldn't be able to maybe write like a full-length novel, or they wouldn't be able to do the social media marketing side of my business, because I want that done in native English level. But in terms of website design, they can design a website without knowing English to the degree that I do, or you do, or your listeners do. They can design a logo. They can edit a video because they have the skills of a video editor. So I did realize there are some communication barriers. And what ended up happening is I started sending friends their way, and I started creating a little side business. And I haven't fully turned it into a full business, but it's been great so far. And a lot of people don't realize that Venezuela is an outsourcing market, because normally when you think of outsourcing, you think of India, you think of Philippines, where we both are, and you might think of Eastern Europe, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast. But Venezuela, Latin America, it's an up-and-coming outsourcing market, because nowadays most of the younger people can and do speak English, especially the ones who are more globally minded and are looking to work with international clients. And, obviously one of the other cool benefits is North America is in the same time zone as South America. Mm. It's not like it is here in the Philippines, which, speaking of challenges, has been, oh my God, an incredible challenge to work with my coaching clients, because I'm working like 9 a.m. Pacific or 9 a.m. Eastern, and that is like 9 p.m. Manila time, or like almost midnight Manila time. So I'm doing my coaching calls between like 9 p.m. and midnight, my local time, while my clients in North America are just waking up. So there you go. Those are some the history there of how I started outsourcing to Venezuela. And I would definitely encourage your listeners to maybe look at outsourcing and just try it. Maybe try it in a small project like a logo design or a little bit of a social media graphic. And if you don't like it, if you don't think the quality is up to par, then you can just hire someone and pay them higher in your local hometown. But if you see what I see and what Derek sees, you'll realize that, wow, there's an incredible power to this. And I just want to finish with this point. What we're doing when we, from the Western world, outsource to the Eastern or developing world, we're supporting the local economy, and we're balancing it from a one-sided rich Western, continents and the poorer developing continents to be more balanced, because we're distributing wealth, from the rich countries to the poorer countries. So, man, we can change the world through the power of outsourcing.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm a huge proponent of outsourcing, and it's an absolute win-win. It obviously benefits the destination countries, but I'm also really convinced that it also benefits the home country, whether that's the US or Canada. There's a lot of resistance to outsourcing because of these fears, but actually what it does is it builds more stronger companies, more efficient companies, which then benefits the employees of those companies and the community around it and the taxes paid. So, I think it is quite a limited view just to sort of see the short-termism of, potentially taking jobs. But it's actually about expanding companies, having them more profitable, creating more jobs and more higher-skilled jobs. Yeah,
absolutely.
And so... I just want to speak as well. I had a really good experience recently, actually, in co-living spaces. I don't know if you've had any experiences of those, but I stayed in Alicante in southern Spain for about 4 months and basically worked in a co-living, co-working space. And again, these are quite a new occurrence within the kind of digital nomad ecosystem, but effectively, you know, they're working living spaces that are shared with digital nomads. Everyone's kind of on a shared mission. Everyone has shared experiences. Really exciting places. Have you stayed in those kind of environments with your family? And do you see those as a growing trend?
Yes, and yes, I have stayed in those, and I do see them as a growing trend. And those are actually one of my favorite types of places to stay. So yeah, people ask us that question a lot, like, where do you stay, right? Is it hostels? Is it hotels? Is it Airbnbs? Is it homestays? Is it camping? Well, you know, we've actually done hostels too. Nowadays, hostels are becoming much more family-friendly and couple-friendly and private, you know, individual traveler who doesn't like a dorm with snoring other backpackers friendly. Hostels, I would say, are a great way of obviously saving money and having that community feel. Hotels, you know what you're going to get. A hotel in Amsterdam, Netherlands isn't much going to be much different than a hotel in Tokyo, Japan. The one in Tokyo, Japan might be just a little bit smaller because of lack of space. But a hotel is a hotel, no matter where. You're going to have your one-star, three-star, five-star, and seven-star hotel in like the Burj Al Arab in Dubai, right? And then you have Airbnbs, which is also like, you know, a trend that's really taken off in the last, you know, I would say like less than 10 years. That's basically a local person renting out their home, either their whole home, their whole condo, or a room in their condo. And that's a great model because it empowers the local people to share their home with the traveler. And you get to feel how a local person lives, which you don't get at a hostel hotel. There's also homestays, which I'm a big advocate of. When we were traveling Central America and South America, we did a lot of stays with Latinos, which allowed us to gain and learn the language and integrate into their family and to see how a Latino family lives on a day-to-day basis. Like, what do they do in the morning? What kind of breakfast do they eat? What's their day like? What's the role of the father? What's the role of the mother? How are the kids behaving to each other? You know, who's visiting? That kind of stuff. You can't learn that from The Lonely Planet. You can't learn that from YouTube. You got to stay with the local. And lastly, going back to the question you brought up, co-living. So there's a whole movement now towards co-working spaces, and you can find those in all the major economic centers around the world. But people realize that co-working solves the problem of people needing fast Wi-Fi and you know, a community feel in their local environment. But co-working didn't solve the traveler's dilemma of coming to a new country and then you know, checking into a hotel and finding out the Wi-Fi was so terrible that they wouldn't be able to do their very, very, very important call. So all of a sudden, you're kind of stuck. What do you do for the traveler kind of person, right? So this whole movement towards co-living and co-working spaces developed. And nowadays, there's actually a few branches of, they're called the digital nomad houses. One is called Outsite, not outside, but Outsite, so Outsite. And they have branches in Canada, sorry, not Canada, the US, like the California coast, into Nicaragua and Costa Rica. There's also the Salinas brand. They are actually in Colombia, several Latin American countries. Now some of those have expanded into Asia to places like Bali and Thailand, where there's more of a growing need because a lot of digital nomads, they go to where the sun is. They're sun chasers. So they chase the sun from maybe cold Europe or cold Canada, or cold North America, or cold Australia or New Zealand, and they go to hotter Bali or hotter Thailand or hotter the city of Eternal Spring, Medellin. So in these digital nomad houses, hotspots, you'll find digital nomad houses. And I definitely do feel the shift is going to occur more and more there, where more people create more co-working, co-living houses around the world. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up as well, Derek.
It's an exciting growing trend, isn't it? And I suppose just finally then, Ricky, the Philippines. You are obviously married to a wonderful Filipina, and you're now based here for some time. How do you see travel around the Philippines? To me, it's still a little bit off the radar. There's not really a lot of people coming here, and certainly I think the digital nomad scene is you know, still has a long way to go and grow here. What are your opinions for budding digital nomads considering the Philippines?
Derek, I feel like sometimes you and me are the only digital nomads here. I definitely feel very lonely here. You know, of course, I have my wonderful wife and my kids, but in terms of you know, people like you and me, we'll get it right away. We have the same mindset. We can talk about entrepreneurship, internet marketing. We can talk about our difficulties with you know, the Wi-Fi issues and all these kind of issues that maybe a local person or like a person who's not in internet marketing won't be able to understand as easily. So in terms of how I look at the Philippines, I definitely feel that it has a lot of potential, firstly, because a lot of people go into the traditional backpacker route, which is like Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, into Malaysia, Singapore, and then down into Indonesia, maybe into East Timor, then maybe down into Australia. But a lot of people skip on Taiwan. I feel that's a kind of a skipped out territory. Or island, and then of course they skip out in the Philippines. Partly is because of the island geography, right? The fact that if they do come here, there are no ferries. They are obviously those cargo ships that the Filipino seamen go on, but they're not open to tourists or travelers, right? So you have to more or less fly here, unless you do what I did. I actually was crazy enough to take the ferry from Sandakan to Zamboanga, from basically from Borneo to Southern Philippines. But that is aside, Philippines has so much natural beauty. You got the incredible beaches, you got the incredible turquoise waters, you have so much history and culture. If you're interested in the colonial history of the influence of the Spaniards and the Americans, and then of course you have the influence of the Japanese and the other Asian countries here as well. And then you have the delicious food. You know, Filipino food hasn't hit the global scene either. Compared to Japanese food or Korean food or Thai food or you know, Indian food, right? Chinese food. Filipino food, most people, when you ask them outside the Philippines, what's the most famous Philippine dish, they'll give you a blank stare because they don't know anything about adobo or sisig or, you know, Bicol Express or Kare Kare or some of the delicious foods found locally. And then best of all here in the Philippines is the people. Man, oh man, that's why I married one. Because my wife's a sweetheart. But, you know, like the people here are so hospitable, so kind, and no government is paying me to say this, no tourism board, and my wife's not paying me to say this either. I really feel that the Filipinos are some of the most hardworking people on the planet, but also some of the most hospitable, kind, sincere, and genuine. So I love the people, and I really feel, you know, people like me, I'm a travel blogger, right? So I'm obviously documenting a lot of my stuff on my blog, social media, on my YouTube channel, and I'm promoting the Philippines as a travel destination, as a food destination, as a digital nomad destination. So hopefully, you know, people like myself and what you're doing as well, Derek, are going to help boost the tourism economy, and then the tourism boards will start paying us because we brought in literally hundreds of millions of tourists into this amazing country called the Philippines.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more, actually, and I'm waiting for the check from the tourism board. But yeah, it's an amazing place, and I think, you know, tourism could grow. I don't know what the figures are, but at least 10 times to equal that of Thailand, you know, and it has at least the beauty and the kind of intrigue of Thailand. So I think we've got a long way to go, but it's certainly an exciting journey ahead. So thank you so much, Ricky. And if anyone wants to get to know more about you and any of the products that you offer, how can they do that?
Yeah, you know, what I'm best known for is daddyblogger.com. I have a special passion for dads and empowering them to be the best fathers, the best husbands, the best leaders they can be, the best entrepreneurs, etc. And if you're interested in the whole digital nomad side of thing, the thing we cover the most in this show, make sure you check out digitalnomadmastery.com, where I've interviewed almost 500 different guests, and Derek's actually one of the interviews, so he'll have the link below to his episode and also to the show as a whole. So digitalnomadmastery.com, And I do private coaching and training and online courses on all of these things that we've talked about. So if you need further help, I would be happy to help you, support you, and equip you any way I can. So Derek, just want to thank you for having me on your show here today. It was an honor and a pleasure.
Fantastic. Thank you, Ricky. You really opened my eyes to the rest of the Philippines and nomadism. So thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Okay, that was Ricky Shetty of daddyblogger.com and digitalnomadmastery.com. So if you want to reach out to Ricky or want to know any more about anything he does, go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/198. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.